Every few months, Australians are reminded of the recycling crisis gripping the country.
Asian countries are rejecting our waste while levies are being siphoned off and used by governments for general revenue.
Australia is known for its spotless, untouched landscapes, pristine beaches, and seemingly endless deserts. But it's being replaced by a new urban landscape. Mountains of shattered glass, recycled plastic in landfill due to China turning away our rubbish, and dodgy contracts with councils. Whichever way you slice it, Australia's handling of recycling has been extremely poor. Recycling ending up in landfill is not the only problem.
Major recycling company SKM went into receivership today, and the race is on to stop thousands of tonnes of waste going to landfill from 30 councils it had contracts with.
For Australia's recycling program to be effective, households have to buy into the concept. But with every new story of recycling being trashed, the public's confidence in the recycling system and the likelihood of using it is undermined. Its mismanagement could cause the whole industry to fall over. Fed up, the Prime Minister announced a $20 million fund to create markets for Australia to recycle its own waste, as well as a $100 million direct investment in recycling capital.
You put a plastic bottle in a plastic bucket and it says recycling on it, well, it should be recycled. Now, this is not happening.
But the lofty goals of the recycling revolution that were promised when state and federal governments got together at COAG have yet to come to fruition. We are still drowning in a mess of our own making.
This is where some of our waste ends up. Exported and left to flood small towns throughout Southeast Asia.
Whilst we're terrific at putting this stuff out, recycling is ultimately about taking that material and making it into new products.
This is Please Explain. I'm Chris Sapone. This week, Australia's recycling crisis.
We stand ready to work with the Commonwealth to achieve the objectives of reducing waste and seeing more recycling across the nation.
As Australia's recycling ends up in a landfill and continues to stack up around us, how can we solve a situation that has become a crisis? This week on Please Explain, we're joined by James Masola, our Southeast Asia correspondent based in Jakarta, and Jewel Topsfield, our Melbourne editor. James and Jewel, thank you very much for being here.
Welcome.
Thanks, Chris.
Let me start with Jewel. These days, when people put a bottle into their container to recycle at home, increasingly there are questions about whether or not these bottles are actually ending up recycled or are they ending up in landfills. Can you tell us, as of today, what are the chances that these bottles are actually finding their way, or this material is finding its way to recycling itself, or is being waylaid somewhere else?
I think the answer to that is that it is absolutely still worth recycling. But I think that a lot of us have to look at our own recycling practices. And what we are seeing is that recycling is very contaminated. So people do, there's this great expression, wish cycling, which is basically that people throw anything in the yellow recycling bin in the hope that it might be recyclable. And so often people are really contaminating their recyclables. So plastic bags is a number one example of this. And also just by having dirty containers as well, not cleaning. And so when you have really contaminated recyclable material, it means that it can no longer be exported to Asian countries. So in the past, it didn't really matter because Asian countries were accepting recycled material regardless really of how contaminated it was. But increasingly, as Asian countries crack down on our contaminated waste, it's becoming really crucial that we are more vigilant and that the public is better educated about the need to recycle properly. So I would say, yes, on the whole, it is absolutely still worth recycling. And if recycling is done properly, then it will hopefully be recycled. But the more that things like nappies, plastic bags are just thrown in with recyclable material, the more likely it is that it will end up in landfill.
Okay, so within Australia, what has changed about recycling over the past few years to put us in a position where we're not sure about how much recycling is actually making it to its final destination?
What's really changed, and I think, you know, and I'm sure that James would agree with me here, for me, the big eye-opener about the waste issue was just how much of our recyclable material was being exported to Asian countries. I really had no idea. And I think for a long time in Australia, we were quite naive and we patted ourselves on the back and we thought that we were, you know, doing the right thing because councils collected our recycling. And then it became apparent when China really said, we don't want to be the garbage dump for the world anymore. We want to encourage our own circular economy. We don't want to import waste from other countries anymore. So they really introduced something called, in 2018, called the National Sword Policy. And that introduced really, really, really strict contamination policies. So they said that recyclables that had more than 0.5% contamination would no longer be accepted. And that, because, you know, harking back to the point that I was making and that we've become really quite sloppy over the years with our recycling, meant that a lot of waste, just recyclable waste that was contaminated, just got stockpiled in warehouses. And that's what we've really seen, that suddenly we're faced with this, what we call the recycling crisis, because we don't have our own recycling industry really, or it's quite nascent. And we're faced with these piles and piles of recyclable waste that is contaminated that we don't really know what to do with.
Okay. And James, now let me ask you, how is it that Australia became so reliant on shipping waste overseas? I mean, this must not have happened just overnight. What was the process that led the country to that position?
Look, I think, Chris, Jill just touched on it, and I think she's exactly right. In large part, my understanding is it's about economies of scale. So we're a huge landmass, Australia, with a relatively small population of around 25 million people. So economically, particularly because it's, you know, we're spread out along the coast, you know, all around the country, it was difficult for companies to get to that critical mass where it was economically viable for them to process here in Australia. Balancing that or adding to that problem is that it's simply a lot cheaper to ship some of this plastic waste, some of this paper waste, to countries overseas. So over a period of a decade or two, even as councils ramped up their recycling programs, really what we saw is a shift towards more and more being sent, more and more waste being sent overseas, to the point where I think the numbers in 2016-17, Australia used something like 3.5 million tonnes of plastic. About 180,000 tonnes of it was reprocessed here, and about 235,000 tonnes. So the majority of our plastic waste was being processed overseas up until the point that the National Sword Policy, China's policy on recycling, was introduced.
So James, I'm struck by the fact that Australia was exporting so much or relying so much on exporting their waste for processing that it's almost like there's a correlation between this and what's happening in globalization itself. So now countries are thinking more about their national economies and their national development rather than simply relying on the international market. Do you think that's a fair sort of parallel to make?
Look, no, I think that parallel is spot on, Chris. So, you know, what we see throughout Southeast Asia at the moment is countries essentially modernizing, massively expanding middle classes, as at least in part a result of globalization. And while that expansion of the middle class of educated people with disposable incomes has taken place, there's also been an increase in sentiment, essentially, that has said, well, why should we be the dumping ground for another nation's waste? Now, it's not just Australia that's been sending this waste to Malaysia, to Indonesia, to Vietnam, to Thailand. It's a lot of wealthier Western nations. So this is a problem, or this kind of blowback, if you like, which has come in Southeast Asia, which has inherited this business from China. I think this is very much a product of globalization.
You've both talked about this National Sword Policy, which has a pretty intimidating name, from China. Can you give me a little bit more background on what was the thinking behind this and what effects it's had, not just on Australia, but around the world?
The National Sword Policy was formally introduced in February 2018 by China. It was flagged a few months earlier. Essentially, what it's done is require countries who have been exporting plastic waste and paper waste to China to export materials that are much less contaminated. Jewel was touching on that before. So I think the purity level has to be 99.5% just paper or 99.5% just plastic. Not this situation where, you know, as Jewel said, you've got nappies mixed up and plastic that can't be recycled. The practical effect of that, Chris, has meant that the amount of, or the volume of plastic that has been sent to China has plummeted. And as I mentioned before, Southeast Asian nations have started to pick up the slack until we've seen this blowback there as well.
So, Joel, can I ask, after China implemented this policy, has it been really the difference between night and day for recycling in Australia?
Absolutely. And I mean, that's why we're seeing in Victoria, we've seen the collapse of the recycling firm SKM. And that is absolutely because suddenly they didn't have a market for their recyclable material. And so because really we got caught asleep at the wheel in terms of developing our own processing and remanufacturing of plastics. And so because we were just exporting it, suddenly when we could no longer do that because the recyclable material was too contaminated, basically, SKM and other firms had nothing, could do nothing really, but stockpile in the hope, I don't know whether sort of they were hoping that we would develop ultimately a domestic industry or whether China would loosen its restrictions again. But this, of course, caused a fire hazard. So we had several fires of stockpiled waste in factories, and ultimately it meant that SKM collapsed this year. And councils in Victoria, 33 councils, I believe, in Victoria, were forced to start sending their recycled material to landfill. And that is devastating also because of the impact that it has on people's faith in recycling. And I think that's a question that you touched on at the beginning. When there is this belief that there's no point recycling because it's going to end up in landfill anyway, regardless of, you know, whether that is true, although sadly for, you know, a few weeks it has been true here in Victoria for many councils, then people lose faith and think, well, what's the point in recycling at all?
And is somebody at the federal level looking at what's going on in recycling, and do they see it as a crisis, or is this just one more issue to sort of to cope with among all the others that you would in governance?
I think it's absolutely seen as a crisis. I think sometimes the recycling and waste industry sort of slightly euphemistically call it an opportunity, but absolutely. And I mean, we are seeing some positive signs. So federally, there's been the first ever waste reduction minister. Trevor Evans has been appointed. So we have someone specifically looking at that. There is a national waste policy. And that's done through COAG. And last December, I believe they met and they agreed to some things, but they didn't actually agree to, there are a whole lot of targets to reduce landfill by a certain period in time. And those fairly ambitious targets weren't agreed to. So there seemed to be a bit of a stalemate now. I noticed that the Waste Reduction Minister is now talking about procurement targets, which means the state governments will agree to purchase for things like roads and infrastructure a certain amount of material that contains recycled product. So again, they're talking about ambitious targets later in this year, and they're hoping that the states will agree to those. So there is a national waste policy as such, but I would certainly argue that it is still in its early stages.
And I've read some commentary that they see this industry as potentially lucrative if they can set it up correctly. Is that a bit too optimistic? Is that just what people in the industry would say? Or is it possible that if they can get a viable waste management industry together, including recycling, could it become something that actually was a money-making venture?
Well, you're absolutely seeing some exciting innovation with things like making roads out of toner containers and glass. And apparently that the bitumen or that the kind of quality of the asphalt is stronger than conventional asphalt. So there are, you know, promising opportunities, but it just requires, I think, a different mindset, and there really has to be those sorts of possibilities really have to be championed by government. And I think that's why the procurement targets is a positive step, just actually making state governments think about where they purchase their materials from and that recycling be a large component of that.
Now, James, let me ask you, it strikes me when we talk about the quality of waste that's being recycled, that it's even possible to know how this level of detail about the pallets of rubbish that are being shipped offshore. Is that new as well? I mean, it seems like a 10, 20 years ago, it would be hard to know what was actually inside these pallets. Is that something that reflects basically this new information era that we're in, where so much information is so widely shared?
Yeah, look, I think it does to some extent, Chris. So, you know, up to a point, probably 20 years ago, it was possible to test and to investigate what sort of materials were in recycling pallets that were being sent overseas or dealt with here. But there probably wasn't as much attention paid to it. What's happening now is that people are paying more attention to it because, you know, we see stories about villages in eastern Java, you know, the main island of Indonesia, where the villages are essentially inundated by plastic or the remains of plastic that's being sent over that can't be recycled. So what's happening is that governments, you know, through their customs services, are actually examining more carefully what's coming into their country, you know, what is going to be recycled, what's going to get, you know, left over and probably end up, for example, in the rivers and then the oceans throughout the region. So while the tech was there 20 years ago, the testing and the will to sort of examine wasn't. Now it definitely is there. We're all more aware of, you know, the sort of negative impacts these different pieces or types of recycled waste can have on the environment. So people are examining them more carefully.
And I understand that the Morrison government has pledged to work with governments in the region that are receiving waste from Australia and that in certain cases that they want to turn back. How does this look internationally? I mean, what are the optics of this, of a developed nation like Australia exporting waste that it's unable to process to poorer countries?
It looks, frankly, Chris, it looks dreadful. There have been protests throughout Indonesia and parts of Malaysia, outside embassies, people saying, you know, don't send your, I won't use the swear word, but don't send your rubbish our way, deal with it in Australia. Malaysian government, the Indonesian government, they've held press conferences kind of calling out Australia and other wealthy nations, you know, parts of Europe, the US, Hong Kong, Japan, for doing this. The reaction or the decision by Morrison and his government to start working more closely with these Southeast Asian nations has been pretty warmly welcomed. Because while there is a desire to stop this waste being shipped, in some cases, you know, some of this plastic waste in particular is being kind of snuck in containers that are only supposed to contain paper waste. So there's been a sort of element of deception there too, which has really annoyed local governments here, understandably. I mean, what happens is that there's not actually a lot of inspection that goes into the containers that are being shipped out in Australia. So really, you know, some of it, or at least some of the onus is on Australia to inspect these containers more carefully before they get shipped to other countries. And indeed, now Morrison has said, essentially, we're not going to ship anything unless we've looked at it very carefully, unless, you know, we know that it's of a high quality of plastic that can actually be recycled, and that has been welcomed.
And is that something that there's the infrastructure to actually enforce domestically? I mean, do we have people that can actually inspect this material as it's leaving, or are there gaps in that process as well?
My understanding is that the sheer volume of waste that leaves in these big shipping containers, it's impossible to inspect all the containers. But what you can do is set more stringent targets for, you know, the sort of quality of the plastic waste or the quality of the paper waste, and then have more spot checks by customs officials here, you know, in Australia at the docks in Melbourne or in Sydney or in Brisbane. And then again, more stringent checks when the material arrives or was arriving in Indonesia, Malaysia, wherever it might be, just to ensure that people are sort of on their toes, if you like, and not trying to pull a quick one, as has been occurring up until very recently.
So with China having backed away from this market, essentially, do we expect other countries to fill in that gap? Or is it that the move by China is so big that it's going to sort of shift the behavior of most of the countries that were before sending their waste there?
Well, I mean, we have sort of seen a domino effect straight away in that countries like Vietnam, Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand did initially take on, India did take on more of Australia's waste when China really effectively kind of imposed bans. But, you know, what we're seeing now, and this is what James has been reporting on, is that other countries are starting to follow suit and crack down. And I think that that is partly because previously it's the optics that we just that Asian countries resent this notion, as James was saying, of them being kind of the rubbish bin of the Western world. But also, I suspect, because they are also improving their own recycling and waste collection processes, and they generate obviously sufficient waste to be able to feed their domestic industry, their domestic processing industry. So that's what you see with China, really, where they're moving towards actually a very admirable, almost a circular economy, which is where you see waste being reused and recycled. So in many ways, I guess what we want to recreate is what China is doing. And that's where we really encourage our own domestic industry to be able to reprocess waste.
So that's interesting. So then it is this shift. It's another shift away from the globalization solution towards a more strategic sort of national goal strategy, right, that would be adopted here, that you'd see adopted elsewhere in more developing nations as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, waste to energy is a whole other discussion, but in European countries, in some European countries where they do have a lot of incinerators, where they create electricity and power out of burning waste, then you do see them also importing waste from other countries to feed these incinerators. So they are unable to create enough waste domestically. So yeah, you do see that in some European countries where they actually import waste as well.
So one day Australia could become a net importer of waste if they could process it and get energy from it.
Waste to energy is still a very emerging technology here.
In the big picture, where do we see this heading in, say, the next 12 months?
I think there needs to be a really good education program about what can and can't be recycled. Still, we've got a lot of, here in Victoria, a lot of councils that are sending their recyclable waste to landfill following the collapse of SKM. So it will be really interesting, I think, to see what occurs in this space. I think that targets such as the ones that Trevor Evans is discussing about state governments actually having a mandated level of recyclable content in when they procure materials for infrastructure, I think that that's really important. So I think it's a combination of state and federal sort of regulations, but also improving right down at the household level education and our understanding of what can be recycled and the most clean and efficient way of doing that. And it's really interesting. So we actually have a story coming out today, I believe, which is looking at Surf Coast Shire Council, which is moving to having 5 different bins for their recycling. So plastic, cardboard, paper, glass. And I think that that is really interesting because that's very much the European model, where they are so much more stringent about separating it out their recycling than we are. And I think we'll start to follow Europe's lead in that.
Okay. And James, what do you see as the next big step in the story in the next 12 months?
Over the next 12 months in the region here, I expect to see countries like Indonesia and Malaysia, the Philippines, so on and so forth, bedding down these more stringent policies whereby it is more difficult, you know, where the rules are tougher, where they won't simply accept any old bit of plastic or container rather of plastic waste or paper waste. I think that'll take a little while to play out. I expect that there will be some kind of, particularly here in Indonesia, some fly-by-night cowboys who will continue to try and get around what will be tougher rules because they rely on this plastic waste and they can get it cheaply. They don't care if it's a sort of lower quality. Over the next 5 years, what I'd like to see is a rollout of recycling facilities in a way that you know, we just haven't seen here yet. Now, country to country, every country is different in the region. You know, Singapore and Malaysia do a pretty good job of recycling domestic waste. The industry here in Indonesia is really very much in a nascent or early stages. It's just not that easy to actually recycle here. I would hope that over time, in his second term, President Jokowi mandates some national laws that begin to actually give life to a proper domestic recycling industry here. So what happens at the moment with the recycling factories that actually exist? A lot of it's just burned. Some of it's turned back into, some of the plastics turned into new plastic products. That's good. I'd like to see more of that occurring. You know, I would like to see less of it burned and put into the atmosphere. And most of all, and this is something Indonesia is very keen to sort of take a global lead on, more action to stop so much of this plastic waste ending up in the world's oceans, because after China, Indonesia is the second largest polluter of the world's oceans with plastic waste. And, you know, as Jill would know, as anyone who's been to Indonesia would know quite well, the quality of the waterways, the quality of the water in this country, it's pretty bad. Rivers and you know, obviously beaches and oceans, they're terribly polluted. That's something that over, you know, years and over decades has a deleterious effect on the life quality or the living standards of everyone who's here, and also more broadly in the region. And that's something that really has to be addressed, and hopefully it will be.
Jewel and James, I thank you very much for your time on this topic that is, that touches everything from economics to what we do in our kitchen to politics to technology. So thank you again for your time on this, and we'll look forward to what happens next.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks for that, Chris.
Kate McClymont here from the investigative team at The Herald. Much of what we do is giving a voice to the unheard and holding the powerful to account. Whether it's rampant underpayment in the fast food industry, sexual harassment in the entertainment world, or uncovering Australia's recycling crisis, our coverage proves the value of investigative journalism. Good reporting needs supporters. Subscribe today for just 50 cents a day. Just look for subscribe on any of our websites.
To talk through some of the finer details about the waste management crisis that's afflicting Australia, I have with us today Garth Lamb, who's the national president of the Waste Management Resource and Recovery Association of Australia. Garth, thank you very much for being here.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
So let me put to you a question that I've put to earlier guests. If I'm at home and I'm just about to recycle a glass bottle or a plastic piece of plastic, is there a chance that when that item goes into my recycle bin, it doesn't actually end up recycled?
Look, it is a complicated system, and it depends on the material type that you're looking at in terms of what's the percentage recovery going to be. You know, there have been some issues in the industry, particularly in the Victorian market of late, and obviously we're all aware that some of that material, the system isn't working as it's supposed to be. But generally, when the system is working, you know, yes, you should have a lot of confidence that if you're putting the right material in your yellow bin, it is absolutely being recycled. No one at the recycling end has an incentive to send that to landfill. We are all trying to get the most value out of it as we can.
So why currently do we have this national recycling crisis?
Look, there's been a massive shift globally. This isn't just something that's affecting Australia. Again, China was the world's biggest buyer of recycled materials. Even for Australian recyclers who weren't exporting directly to China or to Asia, you know, that has just created this huge change in the market. The value, the supply and demand has just completely changed. And the value of that material, even if you're selling it in Australia, is all linked to international benchmarks. So it doesn't matter if you've been exporting your recycling or doing it locally, the value of what's in the bin has absolutely collapsed because the biggest buyer has exited the market.
So that, and that is an important point to make. This global price has dropped significantly over the past two years. Is that right?
Absolutely. It has had a huge impact on recyclers all around the world, not just in Australia. Look, we have seen some pretty spectacular examples in Australia where some of the business models were built much more on that export basis, and they've fallen over, you know, and it's been too slow to respond to how do we fix that? How do we pick it up? I think we know how to do that, but it takes time. It takes a long time to turn these ships around, and it's disappointing that we're waiting until we're in absolute crisis mode before we take the steps that we all know we have to take.
So what exactly is wrong with recycling today in Australia?
Look, one of the things that people, I guess, are starting to realise is that recycling isn't just putting something in the yellow bin. You know, the whole idea of recycling is to capture these valuable materials and get them back into the economy rather than just going and digging up new resources. But if we're not buying back those products, if we're not buying back recycled content, then we're not really doing the whole recycling. And I think that's where we're really falling down in Australia, is in closing that loop and getting these materials back into production so that we can create the local circular economy. That's the bit that we've been missing to date.
So then the issue is developing local markets for that create the demand for this material. Is that right?
Yeah, that is correct. And there's been a perception that Australian recyclers are exporting materials, you know, so that it could be disposed of more cheaply in Asia. And that's absolutely not what's been happening. It's not the reason for this. You know, the fundamentals are that China has been the world's biggest manufacturer of materials. That means it's got the world's biggest demand for raw materials to make all those things that we want to buy, and that's why it's been the world's biggest buyer of recycled content. So that manufacturing pull is the reason that a lot of materials have been going to Asia, and that's what we need to create in Australia, is that manufacturing pull, which is driven by consumer demand for recycled content products made locally.
And so, as of today, what are some items that can easily use recycled materials to produce them?
Look, there's a whole range. I mean, one that absolutely drives me to distraction is around glass. You know, the reality in Australia is that we don't make as many new glass bottles as we have in the recycling stream, so we can't send all that recycled glass back into a new bottle. That said, we can really easily take the surplus glass, crush that back down into sand, the raw material that it came from, and use that instead of going and mining a beach or mining a riverbed. And it's absolutely ludicrous that we've got stockpiles of glass that we could convert to sand and use in civil works projects, for example, but we're not doing it. We're still buying the virgin stuff instead of using the recycled content. It's really quite crazy.
Now, is this the problems that we have with recycling today, could we see these on the horizon, or have they really taken the country by surprise after China made their policy change?
Look, I think we've definitely have known that these issues were coming. I think we've been talking for a long time about trying to add more value in Australia, but this is part of a wider issue. You know, it's the same reasons that manufacturing has moved offshore. It's the same reasons that recycling was going offshore, is that it's following that manufacturing. You know, we need to reevaluate what we're doing here. I think for too long we've been just trying to do recycling at the lowest cost possible rather than trying to look at what's the highest value possible for the community. So yes, you might be able to save a few dollars by selling material to an Asian buyer who wants to pay more for it than a local buyer, but is that really the greatest value for our communities? Or is that, you know, creating local jobs and creating new products and new economic activity in our own backyard? And I think that value equation is really where we've stuffed up. And I think that's what we need to change.
So then, as you said, this is part of a bigger issue, which is the mix of the Australian economy, how much manufacturing, how much service economy, how much export, how much import. Is that right?
Yeah, look, that is correct. And I guess also about what sort of materials do we have? You know, there's certain materials that we do manufacture in Australia, and they're the ones that we've got great demand. You know, there's really strong demand in Australia for cardboard and for paper. You know, we do recycle a lot of that onshore. We do that for PET, PET soft drink type plastics. We do that for HDPE, which is your milk bottles. But there's other items in the yellow bin that just, we don't make them here. We don't make them here. And if we're going to try and get them back into the productive economy, we've either got to find alternative products or we've got to send them back to other areas. And I think what we need to do is find those alternative markets and also be more selective about what are the materials actually on our supermarket shelves, and making sure that the ones that we sell into the market are ones that we can actually use and recycle here.
Now, is there a difference between the recycling schemes based on state? So I understand in South Australia, they recycle things in a different way than some of the other states. Is that correct?
Yeah, look, it is. It's a real shame in Australia that we don't have a level of national consistency that you do see in other places. So it has been a bit of a bugbear for everyone. Things are starting to get a little bit more coordinated. So South Australia, for example, for 40 years, it was the only one that had its container deposit legislation where people were actually getting 10 cents back for their bottles and cans. You know, that's now been rolled out in New South Wales and in the ACT and in Queensland, and WA is coming soon. And those are the sort of really smart programs that we need to expand everywhere. You know, the whole idea of that is getting the people who profit from and use the materials to actually, when they're buying it, to pay the upfront cost to actually have it properly recycled at the end of its life. It creates that local demand. It creates cleaner streams of products that we can do more things with. It's a really great example of what we need to transition to for a lot of other products, so that we're not just sending them out into the market with no idea what's going to happen next.
And so, looking at this issue, though, is there one particular stakeholder that bears more of the blame than any other, or is this just an issue where we've had inertia for so many years and we haven't challenged the way that things are done in Australia, and that's why we find ourselves in the situation that we're in today?
Look, I really do think that this is a shared responsibility. You know, you can point to what can everyone do better, and I can talk through that. But at the end of the day, you can't just point to one stakeholder group and say, you go and fix it. You know, the government can't do that if the community's not asking for better recycling solutions. Industry can't provide better recycling solutions if councils who are going to go and procure the services want to keep undercutting the market and giving their contracts to people who don't do a good job. You know, it needs to be all of us working together. Industry needs to do a better job of making better products onshore, and absolutely can do that. But we need to make sure that the clients are actually buying that. We need to make sure that there's that level of government leadership. And really, really importantly, we need to make sure that the community is actually engaged in this conversation, which I think for the first time in the last couple of years, they are. You know, we don't have this magic equation where the bins just go out and they're emptied and no one knows what's happening. You know, this is on the front page. You guys are talking about it. We're having these conversations. And I think people are starting to realise that we can be smarter, we can do better. We've got such an opportunity to create local jobs, to create local industries. We just need to put a bit of effort into it and, you know, the world can be a much better place.
We've reported about these mountains of glass that are piling up in the outskirts of the of cities. Why aren't we using that as material to be recycled?
Look, it's a great question, and honestly, there is no logical, intelligent, rational reason. You know, the reason is just this horrific inertia where we have people who are used to using a virgin product and trying to change a, you know, a local government pavement engineer's mind around what they've been doing for 40 years to say, hey, here's a product that acts exactly the same as the product you're used to. You know, it just takes a long, long time. We've been working on this for decades. What is missing, the reason it hasn't happened, is that the people who are buying roads aren't out there saying, from now on, we must have recycled content. If that little shift happens, if the federal government says, you know what, we're not going to fund any roads that don't have recycled content, if the state government says that, if local government says that, we will solve that problem overnight.
And so I understand that the government has pledged $120 million to bolster the recycling market and to help startups. Is this the sort of help that you're talking about?
Look, there's no doubt that we need new investment in Australia. So absolutely, having some federal funds available is a great, great opportunity. We've also seen steps such as trying to ban exporter materials that are designed to try and help build that local capacity. We are all waiting on what is in the national waste policy. We're hoping that that's going to come out after this meeting of environment ministers in November. And we're hoping that it's going to be the real springboard for change. You know, honestly, we've been talking about these issues in closed circles for decades. And it's, you know, there's a lot of great ideas out there. We just need the impetus. We just need to actually get on and do it.
And the decision by China to close themselves off as a market for waste imports, could that be a catalyst as well? Because it aligns with these other issues around national economy, national interest, national security?
Yeah, look, absolutely. Hey, it would have been great if we'd decided on our own bat to go and be proactive and do all these things that we can do. The reality is that we waited until those other options, the cheap options, were closed off to us, and we ended up in a crisis in some markets. You know, the best time to have taken these steps was yesterday. The second best time is today. You know, we just need to get on, get it done. There's some really obvious things that we need to do. We can't sit around wringing our hands for another 10 years talking about the theory of this. We just need to get out there and get it done.
Well, Garth, I thank you very much for your time on this. This is a fascinating topic that looks like it's got some ways to go.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks to our Please Explain guests this week, Garth Lamb, and our reporters James Masola and Jewel Topsfield. Please Explain is brought to you by the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Subscriptions power our newsrooms. To support independent journalism, search, subscribe, Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. Please Explain is produced, researched, and edited by Nicole Purcell and David Escort. Technical assistance by Cormac Lally and David McMillan. Amelia McGuire helps with logistics and planning, and Tom McKendrick is our head of audio. I'm Chris Sapone. Thanks for listening.